Blog Talk Radio.
You to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, June 7th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, are you there?
We're here.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. Glad to have you. And
hey,
I'm doing good. I hope you're doing good, Carla. Are you continuing to get better and better?
I am every day in every way. No, seriously, it's a little slower than we had hoped, but we continue to work with a clinoral bed, and it's very good with pressure sores and skin flaps and all that kind of stuff. So here's hoping that it gets better really, really fast and
okay,
get out of this bed. I'd be so glad.
Well, I hope you're at least feeling better.
Yeah, and Jim is just making the yard look so lovely. One benefit of his retirement is he has time to work in the yard. And every day, more beauties come to life. You know, he's painting and fixing up as well as working with the gardens. Every planting has something new, and our, you know, we've been working on the garden for almost 30 years. So the plantings have really matured, and, you know, and spread and taken hold. And it's just so good. I'm so thrilled with the way things are going right now.
Well, can I borrow him? Jim, can
he's
you
awful handy, I tell you.
Has worked my garden. Oh, I've got a. It's totally overrun with weeds now, and I, you know, some of the weeds are good weeds, but some of them I'd rather not have. But yeah, I haven't kept on top of it. Do you just have a vegetable flower garden, or do you have vegetable garden also?
Just flowers. I'd like to have
vegetables,
but haven't had time. During the last 11 years when I'm doing lawn service, I've tried to get to perennials and things that are easy to take care of. So the garden, especially the vegetable garden, didn't really exist. I didn't have time for it. So I just did ground covers, bushes, flowers, little trees, all kinds of stuff around our yard.
Just
well, that's a little better. Maybe that's my problem. Vegetable gardens just take more work.
Yeah, I'd like to get some tomatoes going, though. I really love tomatoes.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless you have any announcements, I'm going to go ahead and go to the opening riff for today. Nope.
We're ready.
All right. This is from Kuo, the Aaron Kuo Dialogue, Session 7, Weekend 2, Part 2 of 2. The most important point is that expressing service through being service in love is natural to you. And when you do that, you are not doing anything. You are not creating anything. You are simply expressing your own true nature. When that nature is in full harmony with the external positive energy which may move through you, your energy to serve is magnified. At that point, you do not need to ask, how can I best serve? You simply choose the paths that lie right at your feet.
Thank you, Monica. I love that quote. And it deals with something that is so hard to get. It's right at the heart of the experience described in the Law of One and in all of the L&L channeling of Confederation entities. And that is that we are already doing what we need to do in order to be considered perfect. It seems impossible. I could give you a list of things that I have thought in the last 24 hours that all alone would take me off the list of perfect. And compounded day by day, it is so easy to feel that we shall never, ever be where we want to be. We never live in joy. We'll never have peace. And we'll never be of true service. Yet we are, all of us, part of the Creator. It's not part of us. It's all of the essential us. The rest is ego, so-called, and behavior. The rest is us letting the buzz of civilization drown the vibrations of the one infinite creator that are coming through us all the time in abundance, infinite abundance. This is why entering the silence is so vital to our realization of ourselves. It is so easy to get drowned out, so easy to let things go, to think, I'll attend to my deeper self when I have time. Yet you already are your deeper self. Can we pause even one moment in an hour, in a day, to listen to the silence? Can we spend as much as a minute listening within? Where there is something that breathes with us, that moves with us, that lives with us, that is more real than anything we can see or describe about our nature. All goes away, drifts, floats, falls away. When we have that instant of connection to ourselves, that consciousness that we all have in common, that is our true self. That is why when Confederation entities say, as the Ra group did, that they cannot really differentiate between us, that is a truth. The truth is that we are all part of consciousness, and it is through that love, that consciousness that is the essence of love, that we have our very being. The rest is embroidery on truth. And how we get caught in the lace and the frills, the buttons and the bows, of that embroidery. How we get caught in what we look like, in how much we have of the world's supply of goods to pay our bills. And all those other aspects of life which come to us because we are contracting around fear. Do I have enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I smart enough? Do I have a good enough job? One thing and another can take us down, take us away from ourselves. And that is why it is so important to know that if we knock, we may enter the tabernacle of the Most High. Just as we are, we may stumble into that consciousness by prayer, by meditation, I don't care. There are so many ways to approach the silence, to move beneath the surface of life. It is only in moving into the silence, in becoming quite sure that we are love at the very essence of ourselves, that we can begin to understand what service is. Our service is our breathing. Our service is our living. Our service is our witnessing of all that we see. And allowing all of it to fall away as it will before the magnificence of the consciousness of love. We try so hard to be of service, we who wish to live a positively oriented life. We give money, we give our time, we give our talent. We try very hard to be good people and to be sure that our thoughts are those of a person really concerned about supporting those around us, about valuing friendships, about determination to be our absolute most excellent self as we do our work. All of these things we offer to love. And before we ever touch a person in love or listen to a friend in love, or give of ourselves in all those outer ways I mentioned in love, we are already serving because we can't help it. We are those of the infinite creator, heirs through hope of that love that is the reality of us all. May we rest in that love. May we sip upon it as the most beautiful nectar. May we feel the joy of the forgiven. And may we then forgive all, ourselves, those around us, the folly of nation states. Forgive, forgive, and forgive. For we are creatures of love.
Thank you, Carla. I think you just clarified something for me that had been very elusive for a very long time, and I'm not even sure I can explain it because I'm still soaking it all in, soaking it all up. So, thank you for that.
You're
Jim,
very
did
welcome.
You have any? Yes.
Go ahead, talk.
Jim. I was just going to say, Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
No, she said it quite well.
She did. That she did. Okay. I'm going to go to our first question. Actually, I'm going to go to our second question, and then I'll come back to our first question. This is from Last Breath. During meditation, have you ever noticed the various ringing tones that are apparently always present in the mind? If so, I was wondering if you could comment on that. I have found out that this is referred to in yoga as, now I'm not sure how to pronounce this, naad? It's got a D. N-A-A-D. Naad.
Mm-hmm.
Not familiar with that term. So. I've experienced various psychic phenomena after meditating on these sounds, and I'm very curious about it. And also, I was wondering if you know anything about spontaneous ear ringing and what the significance of it occurring in either left or right ear is.
All right. The naad, I've just seen the word and heard it. Not that familiar with the study of it, which is Buddhist in origin, but those tones are the tones of our vibration. We have that main vibration, of course, which is our essential loving selves, and we overlay those primary tones with a whole rainbow, a whole octave, let us say, using notes, of the expression of ourselves that we offer through the way we live and how we relate to people. Each thing that we do has a certain tone, and each of the sub-densities of the inner world, that is the time-space portion of third density, has its own vibratory tone, together making up third density's version of the music of the spheres. And depending on how you meditate on that, how you focus on that, and what your expression of love is, how it expresses itself, whether it expresses itself physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in the outer, in the inner, and so forth, you will be able to come into sympathy with the tones of a certain subdensity that are equal to our outer subdensity. In other words, if say our indigo chakra is where we are speaking the loudest, and we move into the indigo subdensity of third density, we will be hearing that tone, which is the second highest tone that you can hear before you move into the octave. And, of course, in that subdensity, there are many sub-subdensities which have tones to add to that single tone. So focusing on what you're hearing is a way of moving from your meditative self through the gateway to intelligent infinity into space, into time space, into the internal world, the more real world, the world which is more real than our outer illusion, and vibrating with the energy of that subdensity. It's like your own energy becomes able to access the energy of millions and millions and billions of other people that are vibrating at that level. And it is a powerful experience. Now, as to the tones that occur sometimes, Don asked about that actually in the Ra sessions. I don't remember when, but he was experiencing that, and he asked what that was. And the Ra group said, if you hear that tone, listen to it and differentiate between whether it's right or left. And if it's on the right, for Don anyway, that was a good thought. You know, listen to it, remember it. And if it was a negative thought and you got a no, then it was good best to drop that thought and move on. Jim, can you remember the exact words or close to it?
No, just that the body had positive and negative aspects in the neutral sense of radiant and magnetic, not in service to others or service to self or good or bad, but that these areas of the body could be used to give you a signal. And so the tone over the right shoulder or in the right ear was a positive affirmation of whatever thought you were thinking or question you were asking. And over the left shoulder and left ear was a no to the question you're asking. So it's just using the body's physical polarity to help give you answers. The subconscious could do that.
Okay, what if it happens when you're not asking a question or meditating, you're just going about your day? I mean, I've had it happen when I was grocery shopping or something, you know, doing something very mundane, and all of a sudden I get that tone. What do you think
that
means?
What were you thinking? I mean, what were you feeling? You know, I mean, there's nothing really mundane about anything in life. It's just as sacred a task to shop in the grocery as it is to channel or teach 1,000 people or you know, give your life for the poor, in that everything that you do is an expression of you who are sacred. Consequently, whatever your sub-vibration is, you know, maybe you're just thinking about picking out a can of tuna, but maybe underneath that there comes a rush of love for the person you're going to make the tuna salad for. Or maybe underneath you think it would be good to get these mundane chores done so that I can do something else, you know, and you get a tone on that. And you go, oh, well, you know, what was I really thinking at that point? It doesn't have to be anything grand. It doesn't have to be anything, obviously, filled with polarity. But it's a way of breaking into your daily life and saying, oh, that was a good thought, or that was a good expression of yourself, or that was a good mood, or, you know, whatever. Of course, what you do with tones that you get in the middle of your head, I don't know.
I think that suggested a balanced point of view, that basically all was well.
Isn't that Julian of Norwich's phrase, all is well, and all is well, and all will be well?
Yeah.
All manner of thing will be well, yeah. I guess that is what it was. Yeah.
I guess what I'm wondering is why at that moment, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen that often, at least
right.
for me. So, like, why all of a sudden right now, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the question.
What?
I guess that's what it calls you to. Why now? Maybe you'll never understand what it was you were actually thinking, you know, in the deepest sense, or what all the energy was. Maybe you were projecting a really beautiful energy as you went about your shopping. I know certain things that are seemingly mundane make me feel tremendously peaceful. Loading the dishwasher, for instance, is something that is almost as peaceful for me as cooking. I love seeing the dishes come clean. I love getting everything, you know, taking care of my things, putting them back to rights. I've always loved that. And I tell somebody that, and they just look at me as if I were crazy. But, you know, what if going through the grocery and getting the things you need for your family gives you immense satisfaction? That's a very worthy thing to think, to feel.
Well, I've heard the ringing at other times as well. That was an example. But do you think is it your higher self trying to give you a hint or a signal or a message or something like that?
I think so, yeah. I don't know why the higher self doesn't speak all the time. I suppose it does if we're really listening, but I, too, only hear those tones every once in a while. And I guess maybe they just it's hard to get through. All I can think.
All right. Okay. The next question is from Moon Witch. Hey, I like that name. This happened about 6 months ago. It was a fairly normal day, and I took the bus to my college sociology class. But then this guy wouldn't stop talking to me. As soon as I sat down, he came and sat down next to me. He told me to hold out my hand so he could predict my age by sensing my aura, so I did. He guessed it right, and then I kept getting weird feelings like he was trying to force his psychic powers on me, and I kept sensing him trying to manipulate my feelings towards him. He then appeared in my dream that night and somehow showed me where he was located. Next day, I ran into him downtown again on my way to the library, and he told me exactly where he was, same as the dream. I then picked up on him trying to manipulate me with his abilities. I fled. A week later, he and his friend found me once again, saying the Psy Vamp knew I would be at the exact spot, which led me to hide out in the women's restroom, but he was still there 15 minutes later. A few days later, he somehow invaded my dream trying to manipulate it to find out where I'm living, but I forced myself to wake up before he could get an answer. I'm not sure how I can put an end to it all. I mean, it was quiet for a month, but then he's starting to make an appearance again by contacting my sister for the first time. This is from Moon Witch.
Well, Moon Witch, I think that is just the nastiest thing that he's doing to you. It's just a psychic bully, let's put it that way. He's the equivalent of the little boy on the playground that decides, well, I think I'm going to chase that guy home and take his lunch money, you know. It's that love of power and the love of manipulating other people. And I don't know how he got his psychic power, but he definitely does. Now, if you happen to be a Christian, that'll help a lot in my advice to you. But if you're not a Christian, then what you need to do is to think seriously about what is your highest virtue, what is your highest love, to what do you aspire, what do you live by, and what would you die for? This is to get the focus right. I have a shortcut, and that's Jesus. Because I'm a Christian. And it has never failed to work for me to do this ritual. What I do is I make a circle in my hands around my body, first clasping them in the front of me, going around to the back of me. And then I say something like, I am a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ, whom I serve with all my heart, all my soul, all my strength, and everything that is in me. I dedicate myself to his service. And I draw a circle around me. At this point, you take the hands that were in back of you and you draw them around again to the front and clap like that. I draw a circle around me against which no mortal error dares to set its foot. And then you clap again, and that seals it. Do that whenever this occurs to you. And if there was static, the guy's trying to get through again, repeat it. You can do it just like a pill that, you know, you don't have any side effects from if you repeat. For me, it lasts about 4 hours when I'm under attack, and it gets me through the night until about 4 hours, and then I wake up and I realize, oh, good, I have to do that again. And I do it again, you know, realign myself with my most high dream and beloved vision of who I am, whose I am, what I live for, and what I would die for. If you can't say Jesus, say whatever you are a servant of. Are you a servant of love? Are you a servant? Jim, what do you say?
Christ consciousness or service to others polarity.
Okay. Find a neutral word that you can really buy, you know, 100% buy, and substitute that for the name Jesus. You need to be a servant of something. That's the basic principle. You need to be a servant of something. You need to align yourself with a whole lot of energy that is not in the physical world, but in the metaphysical world. When you align yourself with that vibration, you are calling upon all the people between incarnations, all the masters in the inner planes, your higher self. You're calling on unseen friends of all energies to come and help you with this. So you need to focus and pray, as I said, and there will be an audio of this 15 minutes after the end of this program. Go ahead, play it over, write it down, and use it. I promise you, this will, in the end, I mean, it might not take the first time, but keep developing the sincerity and the depth with which you say this prayer. And I promise you, it will block energy like that.
That was very excellent advice, Carla. I'm not sure if Moon Witch is listening, because I'm not sure that she or he even knows that I was going to ask this. This was posted on the forum, but I felt my heart went out to him or her, and
yeah.
I just felt it was important enough to bring up. So I'm going to let him or her know that we covered this on the show tonight so they can hear your answer. Thank you. Okay, the next one is from Storm Shadow. Hey, Carla and friends, I've been thinking long about your comments about how my situation with arguments with my wife has similarities to Carla's experience watching her father and mother argue, and I've come to the understanding that I think Carla's initial impression may be right, that I'm not recognizing that I'm not really being loving by doing this, staying calm and detached and being the rational thinking one, staying in control of the situation. I'm sort of looking down on my partner by not sharing all the information I have with her, whether I believe she'll be capable of understanding or not. It is my responsibility to try to bring her up to the point where she is able to understand whether this is going to happen or not. The point is, I have to try. I've been doing some journaling, and I've come to recognize these tendencies as a strategy I adopted for self-preservation in the house I grew up in, which was somewhat mentally unhealthy. I tried for years, even as young as 11 or 12, to get my parents, my mother in particular, whom I'm beginning to realize had and still has borderline personality disorder, to see how their own actions were making and keeping them miserable. I even remember the moment when I consciously decided to switch tactics. I'd been talking to my mother, was forced by her to move out of pleasant, polite talk into honesty, which never ended well in that house, and for expressing my sincere belief that she was going about things in the wrong way and pushing my brother away from her, and she responded by kicking me out of the house. I knew I could rely on her to eventually reset, and that this edict was sufficiently unpleasant that it would be moved into the box in her mind labeled things that did not happen by the end of the night, and indeed it was, as I quietly returned after midnight and it was never mentioned again. But I also knew that this escalation represented a threat to my survival, as I was not yet old enough to support myself, and I could not risk her someday deciding to keep such a decree in effect. I would never be able to pay for college, and without college, my life would have been irreversibly retarded to the point where suicide may have become too seductive an option, and the incarnation would become a net loss. Yes, I'm a fan of Casey since 10. I framed issues within this mindset even then. So I decided she was no longer to be trusted with the truth in any matter. The risks were too great, and I concentrated on telling her whatever palliative fiction soothed her instead. I reframed my love for her from being honest and open to being kind. I still do this, though I've moved successfully into independence, because I know that borderlines are a higher-than-usual risk group for suicide, especially when reality starts to show through any cracks in the reassuring illusion they erect around themselves that exists to tell them that everything is okay and that any problems come from other people, not the self. I'm sorry I'm really going on and on about this, but anyway, I wanted to let you know, Carla, that your relating my issue to your own family really helped me look at the situation from an outside perspective. I can really understand how your father must have felt. Now I need to make an effort to understand how your mother, and in the process, my wife, felt about the situation from her point of view. Thank you. This is from Storm Shadow.
Okay, Storm Shadow, thank you so much for listening to something that you certainly didn't want to hear. And certainly didn't want to, you know, deal with. And I appreciate that you're very open to trying to work more with your wife. Now, I will agree with you that it's a very scary thing to be vulnerable and allow yourself to be vulnerable. It's also a very scary thing for your wife to allow herself to be vulnerable. And she has covered up that willingness to be truly vulnerable by acting out all manner of expressions, which meant that you couldn't be honest with her. I really think that about the only way you can make breakthroughs of this kind is to agree that you're going to have a very serious discussion. Take it seriously. And then put everything that you say in a sentence beginning with, I feel, I create, I do. Never say, you're doing, you're acting, you're thinking. Never accuse or do anything like that. You are accepting as you do this conversation that in all your vulnerability, you're opening yourself to this other person, and you are telling the truth of your heart. Very difficult thing to do. It's very difficult to come out of it unscarred. And if you and your wife are not used to having this kind of conversation, it might be only possible to do it in short bursts. But Ken Cuse, who wrote The Handbook to Higher Consciousness years and years ago, suggested that in this kind of conversation, this tactic be used. In other words, you begin every sentence with, I create that I am experiencing your being defensive, your being, you know, fill in the blank. I create that I am not letting you know the truth about myself because I am afraid that I will lose you. I will lose your nearness. I will lose you, that you won't accept me as I am, and you will hurt me, but you hurt me deeply. And everything that you say, you need to say it even a sentence at a time and let her react to that one thing that you say that you have created that you feel. It acknowledges that nobody's right. It acknowledges that it's all in how you feel, how you look at things, what you're experiencing. And those things are all truths, no matter how far from some standard of purity or acceptability or whatever they are. These are your feelings. And so you are speaking from the heart. You are speaking words that lay you open to pain. And you are hoping that your partner is able to react to that one sentence and express how she creates her feeling at hearing what you have to say. She then says, oh, I create such and such, and she has to deal with what you said. And I create that this is not true, or I create that what I'm really doing is this. It's a very plodding, slow process. And the reason that it works is that I create means that you are speaking only of yourself, not of the other person. You're just saying how you feel. And you're not expecting that person to do anything but be honest with you. And you have no attachment to whatever comes out of the conversation. You're just attempting to grow closer by sharing when you're both very vulnerable. I think Ken Cuse actually does this with people that have been tied together, not in husband and wife couples, but say, what is it, Jim? I think you went through that program. How many people get together and get tied together for a time?
Well, everybody that's in the group, you choose a partner, and you're tied with a string. It's about 3 feet long, and you spend probably 4 or 5 hours that way.
You have to eat. You have to.
Yeah, you do everything together.
And you can't get away from each other. So it is in that context, you know, that you can't get away. I mean, it sets up a vibration, an energy. Because I think that's what hits people the hardest in relationship is that basically they're trapped. They're a prisoner of their own love of somebody else. And it's very hard to carry this burden of love. It's very hard. And the fact you can't get away from it, the only way you can get away from it is to do like you did and lift yourself aloof from it and stay detached from it. But I'm going to say go ahead. Get attached to to listening to what your wife, your partner has to say, and giving the truth of your heart in the most honest and non-judgmental manner you can possibly think of, you know, that tells the truth, so that you're not blaming each other, you're just trying to explain how you feel. And I think that it may have a good outcome, and I wish you the greatest of luck with it. As I said, under the pressure of your kind of experience, I don't blame people if they decide that it's just too much trouble, too difficult to form a totally equal relationship where you both are safe with each other. And I know even to this day when I hear my beloved husband say, "Carla, we've got to talk," my heart quails within me. Usually it's solved, you know, I mean, we've gotten really good at it. We must spend no more than 5 minutes at any one problem, and we've already figured it out, you know, what's going on that keeps us from feeling close. Well, usually it's I didn't hear something very well, and I thought he said something else. So when he tells me what he actually said, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you said such and such, you know. But it's the willingness to talk, the willingness to let yourself be vulnerable to each other that brings you close and that brings you into each other's aura in a safe way.
Okay. Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Just that it really does work, because it's recognizing the basic truth that we do create our own reality. So as cumbersome as it might be, it begins at the foundation of how we just relate to each other. So that's how it works.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to divert to a question that's not on the list, Carla and Jim. This is from Plenum, because we have a little extra time tonight. This is from Plenum from the Bring Forth Forum, and regarding forgiveness of one's past. And it's just a topic that you might wish to expound upon. I'm guessing that if one has totally forgiven one's past, expected everything, accepted everything that was done, forgiven all the actors that were involved, the end result would be someone who could gaze on any incident, no matter how seemingly embarrassing or heinous, and view it with non-reactivity, the love and the light having been distilled from every experience. One can but paint this as an ideal, as I'm not sure it's entirely achievable. I was triggered into this line of thinking because I was scanning Carla's Living the Law of One PDF. In it, she discloses how she was attacked as a four-year-old by a group of boys twice her age, and it was both violent and sexual. At this level of frankness, it is not the most common. And then I thought, I had the curious experience of being forced to eat a worm as a child because two older kids thought it would be amusing to see another kid doing this. And this was not only humiliating for the act itself, but then they spread stories about how Plenum likes to eat worms. And I can relate it now with time at a distance, but it was seriously damaging to self-confidence and self-worth at the time. And I'm sure most of us have been brutalized by uncaring acts by others. How much of this can we actually forgive and accept? And how much do we think is unforgivable and absolutely unacceptable in any possible way, and the grudge must be held to the end of this lifetime? I should note also that the forgiveness and acceptance also applies to the brutalizing acts that we ourselves committed, and what we are able to accept and forgive, and what we are not able to accept and forgive, thereby without holding forgiveness. I think he meant to say without withholding forgiveness from ourselves. Also, all forgiveness boils down to self-forgiveness, as the actors and parties involved may be long gone, and it is only us holding on to the memories of things past. This is from Plenum.
Okay. I'll talk, and then I definitely want Mickey to handle it, too. In my experience, self-forgiveness lasts no more than a day, and then you have to do it all over again. It's a work of a lifetime. You don't get beyond the things that shaped you, for better or for worse. Those four boys that raped me, even though they didn't have the equipment for it, I was lucky there. But still, it was a rape. It was an ugly, ugly piece of bullying. And I'm sure it's affected my life, you know, ever since, although I don't think about it and haven't thought about it for a long time. I'm sure it shaped me. I'm sure every time my parents did the subtle rape of telling me that I wasn't good enough, it shaped me. I still am, you know, altered in my self-worth, because no matter what I did, and I mean it, no matter how well I did at my tasks, I had been born smart. I went off the IQ levels at a very young age. I think I was tested first at 3, and I always went off at 200. I don't know where the scale is now, but it used to be 200. I'd go off it. They couldn't test me. So they thought that if they told me to do something, that I would be capable of understanding it and doing it. And the problem was, I understood it, but I was too young to do it. So I was babysitting before I could pick up a baby, my brother, terrified, absolutely terrified, but they trusted me because I understood babysitting. I was cooking when I was 10, not helping my mother cook, but trying to put some food on the table when she wasn't well. And with a performance lifestyle and a lot of drinking, a lot of late parties, because my parents were musicians, a jazz musician, my father was, and often the party was right at our house and lasted until dawn. So, you know, there was breakfast to get for my brothers and myself. There was things to do. And I physically wasn't old enough to reach parts of the stove when I was 10. I've not ever been a tall person. And I can remember the strain of it. I can remember having to get up on a stool to do the dishes. And I offer these things because they're in my experience. Heaven knows how you were damaged, but these are things that I know damaged me, because then I would be blamed for not doing them perfectly, when in fact it was impossible for me to do them perfectly. And as you said, at this long distance of time, I have total forgiveness of them. I don't think about it, but my life has been changed forever, because I've never been able to get over that feeling of low self-worth. And when I feel low, I just feel like somebody ought to shoot me, and I could get there very fast. It's surprising to me, after all this time, how quickly a down mood can turn, you know, not particularly suicidal, I wouldn't do it, but I would wish that somebody would and put me out of my misery. So I totally understand whatever reason you have for not feeling that it's possible to forgive. Nevertheless, in clearing the chakras, you do forgive. You take whatever has bothered you during that day. You do it every day, as needed, you know, take as needed. And you think about the things that moved you one way or the other. And if it's been a rough happening that happened to you, say, somebody pulled out in front of me and I was furious. You know, I should be furious. I should have that feeling of, oh, that's okay. You know, that was not meant. That wasn't meant for me. It just scared me, that's all. But still, you know, I was in fear for my life. You know, what do I do with that emotion? Well, you work with it. You think, well, what was the first time I ever had that feeling? And you buckle down and you do the work, and usually you find that there is a first time for every kind of fear. And the later ones just resonate to that and make it bigger. You know, every time it happens, it's buried deeper, because you get out of that and you stuff it down where you don't have to think about it anymore. No, you want to be a forgiving person. Om, om, I'm a forgiving person. Om, om. It doesn't work. What works is to take yourself that day, starting wherever you are, do the work of pinning the pain that you feel to buried pain in your past, so that eventually you see it so many times that you can clear it by forgiving yourself for this whole energy thing. You know, not you can forgive your whole life. It takes a while. But as you know yourself better, as you said, it becomes a quicker job. And it always starts at the beginning. There's never a time when you say, oh, well, I've got this ray figured out. I have my heart open now, and it's always going to be open. I've done that work. Now I can relax about it because my heart will always be open. Well, 5 minutes later, it may close over something. It's when you contract, whether it's anger or fear or any negative emotion. It's when you contract around something that you fall out of your heart. And so your goal then is for that moment, you move through the various things that caused you woe that day. You nail what happened to you the first time this caused you woe. Oh, I know what this is. This has happened to me many times before. That's why this hurts so badly. And you picture it. You let it go all through you, that feeling that is so damaging and so fearful. You let it build, and then you ask your higher self to show you the opposite of it, which is, you know, forgiveness of that in one way or another. And you allow that image to become huge within you. And look at them then when you've done that balancing. You look at them together. And you see there are two sides of one coin. You are a human being. You have had that feeling. Okay, forgive. I know the Buddhists have a saying, Mother, take that. I am that too. Tatwam asi. That's helpful when you feel things like that. Tatwam asi. I am that too. And forgive yourself so that you can move on with a clear heart and an open heart. Nick?
I think it's easy to imagine how time can help us here. The more time it seems to go by, the easier it is to forgive ourselves. Because, well, I guess the old saying is time heals all wounds. But I think even more is what Rai had to say about the fact that there are no mistakes, that what we experience here is really determined by how we look at things that happen to us. And we look at things in a way that gives us the opportunity to learn certain lessons, and they all revolve somehow around love and the self-worth and how we relate to others and how we open our hearts and express unconditional love and how we can learn forgiveness. And these are basic qualities that usually are in our lessons, and we each have unique ways of learning these lessons. We leave our fingerprints on what we do just because it's us that's doing it. Then everybody may be doing basically the same thing, but we all have our own tones, as Carla said at the beginning of the show, that determine how we look at things, how we respond to things, and our determination to use what has occurred as food for thinking and for growing and for expanding. So once we can get a point of view that is, I guess you say, removed by time, removed by space, removed by emotional attachment, a point of view that allows us to look back on an instant or an experience with a broader point of view, a broader eye, then we can begin to forgive everybody, especially ourselves, that took part in that. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to learn various lessons that will require us to forgive, require us to open our hearts in love, and require us to share that love with others, and to be tenacious in our desire to reach harmony and to speak our truths and to do all those things that have meaning for us. So we just need to find that point of view, whether it's time that gives it to us or our experience or our philosophy or what we hold true and dear. We can do it, and that's what we're here to do.
Okay, thank you. We just have a few minutes left, and I wanted to comment on that also, and I just want to say to those that are listening, if we get cut off and we're still talking, it will continue to record, and in about 20 minutes after the end of the show, you can listen to the recorded call in the archive, and you can also go back and listen to previous calls as well, of course, so you can catch the tail end of this. I just wanted to say about what something you said about time, healing, and I definitely agree. It gives us a different perspective, and it gives us strength because we're bringing in the wisdom and whatever we've learned in our life over time into the situation. And yet, in my experience, there have been many times where an old wound got reopened for some reason. For whatever, like an example that comes to mind, when I was 6 years old, my sister, who was really my mother to me, she was the mother to me more than my mother, she left and I felt abandoned. She just moved out. And about 25 years later, because we were not in touch very much at all for most of those years, I saw her again and I somehow or other it came up about how she left, and all of a sudden I was that little girl again. I was that six-year-old child, and I just started crying. I felt so abandoned and, you know, out of the blue, and I'm like, where did that come from? I didn't even realize it was still, you know, that I'd still been carrying that pain, and it really helped tremendously to cry and let those feelings out. So for me, you know, having been trained in rebirthing, it seems like it's very helpful to access the wound somehow, so we can go back once we're stronger and actually, this might sound terrible, but actually dredge it up, actually bring it to our consciousness, remember it, remember how we felt, and then infuse that memory with love and compassion. And what's helped me a lot is to see the people who hurt me, you know, whoever did the brutalizing, and as little children themselves, and think about how they must have been abused when they were kids and how they're just passing on the same pattern, and somebody's got to break the cycle eventually, and it might as well be me, you know, to stop that chain. Mm-hmm. So that's just something that I have found very helpful to be able to forgive those people, is to get to that place of compassion for them by thinking about what they must have felt when they were victimized, because surely they were. Anybody who's doing victimizing was certainly victimized themselves.
Oh, yes. I think we get stronger as we get older because we've survived and we know that we have lived through those things. And I think the deepest experience I've had with something has been grief, because I lost Don to suicide in 1980.
Yeah.
And for years, every time I thought about it, I was so close to it. Even after all those years, I'd go right back into it with all of the attendant emotion. And one time it happened, I remembered it, and it went through me in the purest and the most beautiful energy of grief, and I knew what the archetype of grief was, and I knew that it would never hurt the way it had before, because somehow I'd gone through it so much, I'd cried so many tears, and I'd been open so much to healing it, that finally I got it. And when I think about it now, that pure pang of guilt, envy, anger, all those feelings that make up grief, they pour through me in the most beautiful, dark, but crystallized energy. And I'm sure that is now part of my strength, and I think that's what we really need to do is, you know, the goal is not to become people that don't feel, to become totally unattached, because then we wouldn't be learning a thing. That's not what we're here for. We're here to learn. The goal is, when you experience something, to begin to experience and become the archetype that represents, so that you're living your life in a way that attunes you to the beauty of all things.
Wow, that's excellent. Thank you, Carla. And thank you, Jim. Thanks, everyone who's joined us for the show tonight. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Please check out llresearch.org, the archive website featuring the Law of One material, channeling transcripts and publications, and much more. We are here every week, every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you next week.